Statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome to the Yvonne Candy Show. Motivational, inspirational, and just plain fun. Where celebrities check in and you can check out what's fresh in entertainment, business, health, finance, and more. It's all about your lifestyle. Here's your host, Yvonne Candy.
Hello, everybody, and it is Yvonne Candy Tuesday. Welcome to the show. Well, no matter what your profession, financial planning is a must, isn't it? That's why I've invited my next guest to be on the show, Neil Jasani, certified financial planner for over 20 years. Neil has helped thousands of doctors, small businesses, high-income earners, and high net worth individuals all over the country. He has also published a new book entitled Win the War for Money and Success. And Neil is here to give us some tips that can help us save money and make wise decisions in our financial planning. If you have any questions for Neil, you can call 888-329-3306. 888-329-3306. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Great to be with you, Yvonne.
I know that you've been in business for over 20 years. You are a veteran, and you service many high-income clients. But it's one question I have for you. What is the most concern of them all?
So what I have seen by dealing with many of these people, and those are the people whom I haven't dealt but heard from that one, is what they want is good, decent living. You know, they want their children get the, you know, great education, and they pay the fair share of their taxes. When it comes to the taxes, in fact, I divide our society in a four segment, okay? One is those are at the bottom of the totem pole, those who live near to the poverty line. Mm-hmm. Those are the people are not paying any taxes, unfortunately, or fortunately, these people are the recipient of the most of the program that the actual government has actually put together. Second category, those are the middle income. Third one is the higher income, and the fourth one is the ultra wealthy. So the people are at the both the extreme. They are not much worried about the taxes. You know, mm-hmm. that those are the actual bottom of the totem pole. They are not paying. The ultra wealthy can influence the system, and they can even make the laws in their favor. It's the middle and the upper middle class are paying more than their fair share of the taxes. So I think that is what they are worried about, that one. And that is what the book actually talks about, that one, that win the war for money and success, because these are the people worked really hard. These are the people was able to get in a good school. And now, as they are successful, we are taxing them more.
Right, right. And it is supposed to be that way, I believe. I think the more money you make, the more you can afford. You're supposed to reach back and help those in the lower class, and that's the way, you know, the law is. So that is great, but I do know people that have moved in other areas, in other parts of the country, that are in the middle class, are willing to pay more in taxes so their children can go to better schools. And we have countings here. I did not know that was on. We have counties here in Philadelphia that the taxes are probably $10,000 a year. That is a great deal of money. I guess that's what, around $800 that you're adding on to your monthly mortgage. That's a lot of money. But they do it so their children can have, you know, better education. So I know exactly, you know, what you're talking about. But one of the things I've also noticed, and I wanted to know what you thought about this, did you find that people of the higher income bracket are very concerned about leaving something for their children, and even generational wealth?
And It is absolutely true, because if you look at that, Ivan, what is the purpose of any long-term savings, right? So we do two kind of savings. One is a short-term, that is for the emergency opportunity needs. But the other saving, and the most of the savings we do, that's a long-term savings. And that if you look at the what is the purpose of long-term savings, number one reason of the long-term saving is to obviously create the retirement income. Then the second one is the liquidity, and third one is the legacy for the family, basically. So absolutely, whatever you are not utilizing for your own retirement purpose, that's when you are living as a legacy. And that other, these are the folks are really worried that obviously they want to make sure that they have a comfortable retirement, but at the same time, they want to leave something for their family. And that, as you mentioned, that many of them wants to make sure that, that this wealth lasts for the generation. So absolutely, they do.
Yeah, people are living longer these days. Like they say, the 60 is the new 40. And I know my grandmother, she lived long enough to be a great, great grandmother. So since people are living longer these days, I think it's really important to think of generational wealth. Because if you didn't when you're in your 40s and 30s, if you're not thinking that way, suppose you live to be 90. And what's going to happen to your great-grandchildren or great-great-grandchildren?
And that what you said, Ivan, it is so important, because if you look at, if you go in detail, how can you solve the problem of the poverty that we have, right? I think by leaving some legacy, you are putting the next generation automatically in a little bit better situation. You are hopefully giving them the opportunity to get the better school, better education.
Sure.
That will hopefully help them make more money, so that you are really they're giving them that advantage that they otherwise don't have. So absolutely, that actually generation wealth is probably that one need to think about.
Yes, I think that's very important. Now, what do you say to people that think, well, I don't have, like there's an old saying, two pennies to rub together.
Sure.
I don't have any money at all to save at the end of the day.
This is what I would say. It's like, actually people, those who are overweight, and they say, look, I don't have any time to go to gym, or I'm so busy, so I cannot watch my food, right? So I guess it is the same thing over here. Except certain exceptional situation, you can always save some. And that other, savings not necessarily needs to be the big dollars. It can be, save $5. I mean, can you save $5? Can you not smoke, today? Or,
yeah.
Actually cut down? Can you not drink coffee? the point is that you can always start. And that other, once you build some saving, then you feel really good,
right,
that I have that one. And then what happens is, once you have money, now that money will start earning the return for you. It's going to start multiplying itself. So that I would say, on the few exceptional situation, there's always room to start saving. And that it might not be necessarily big dollars. You can start with smaller, but you got to save for yourself. See that we pay to everyone. Why we are not paying to ourselves, right? We
That's
pay all
true.
Our bills. Why we are not paying ourselves. So
yeah.
I guess that is where that you need to start paying yourself first, and then you cut the checks for the everybody else.
They say that when you get your paycheck, or if you make any kind of money at all, you should take care of yourself first. Do you believe in that?
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah.
And that I have found many a time the automatic savings is a great way.
Mm.
Because many a time, once you see the money in your hand, there's just so much temptation out there.
Right, right.
So that if you don't see it, it's like say, for example, if you are actually working for the corporate America or the anything, that you pay something called employment taxes, right? FICA tax. So automatically Social Security and the Medicare has been already cut before you see your money in your
right.
hand. So the same thing, you add additional few percentages on that one that goes to your bank or your savings account, wherever it may be. So you don't see it, and it is going to start building for you.
Yeah, that automatic withdrawal, I have that. It's wonderful. I don't even think about it. I don't miss it. And they say it has to be a dire situation to get that money. And believe it or not, there's many times that And I know there's a lot of people like me that you think it's a dire situation, but it's really not. And you get over it. Everything passes. My grandmother used to tell me, everything passes. So if you would just be patient, you would probably find another way to deal with it. So great. Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. Great advice. Well, I am also a real estate investor, so I wanted to give some of my colleagues out there some advice. I wanted to talk about the 1031 exchange. Now, can you explain what that is and how does it work for the higher income and the lower income people?
Sure. So that other, I'm just going to give a little bit, other overarching information about the investment, and then I'll go into this detail. So that whenever we are talking about investment, there are essentially six asset class, and one of the asset class is the real estate, right? So real estate can be, two kind. One is that more kind of actually primary residence. You know, that's where whenever you buy that one, your primary goal is to really to live there, to enjoy that one. So it might not be primary the investment purpose. Yes, it is there. It is that we always think in that way. But primary purpose is to live there because you need a roof above your head.
Sure.
But the second kind of investment, that's what you do for the investment purpose. Mm. So that you probably already have your primary resident. This is the secondary that investment you have done either into the actually residential investment or maybe the commercial or the anything. So where the 1031 exchange comes is that when you try to sell that one and there is a gain on the property, because what happened, the actually real estate offers many tax advantages. So over the period, you really take quite a bit of depreciation. Many a time your cost basis in that other actual property becomes zero by the time you sell. So whenever you're selling, you have to pay taxes on that one. So that's the time the IRS Court 1031 allows you to transfer into the other property without paying taxes to the Uncle Sam. That's one is the actual.
Now, you're saying sell, but do you mean your gross or your net? And are you talking about an income property or a primary residence or a secondary property?
Okay, so that I'm talking about non-primary resident, because the primary resident goes through the other tax laws.
Okay.
So if you say, for example, live with your spouse or your partner, and if you've lived more than 2 years, then up to $500,000, you don't have to pay taxes. So say, for example, you buy the house for the $500,000, and in that other 2 years, magically, the value of that house becomes $1 million, and you can sell it for $1 million. As long as you are married, there's two people, you don't have to pay taxes up to $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if there's a more magic happens and you happen to sell at 1.5,
right,
then that obviously you have to pay taxes on the additional $500,000, but what I'm talking is that is for the investment secondary properties, basically. That's where
right.
that you don't have this $250,000 deduction per spouse or the per person in the that house.
Yeah, and we're talking about secondary residence.
Correct.
Because we said primary and secondary.
Correct.
I wanted to just get some understanding on what you just said. Now, that's for a primary residence, right? What if you have an income property which you do not live in and you're just making money off of?
Irrespective. So as long as it is not your primary residence, that you can do the 1031 exchange, as long as it is within the 180 days. Once you sell one property, and say, for example, that you bought one income property for $200,000,
mm-hmm.
okay, that other you get the income, whatever it may be, you that other actually depreciated the property to almost zero, say, for example. And now you happen to get the offer of, say, $400,000 for that property. So if you're selling now, then that what happened, entire $400,000 will be subject to the taxes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than you pay taxes, what you do is you find the other property and you sell this one and buy the other one within 180 days, now you don't have to pay taxes in entire $400,000
right.
that will go to the other Yenaksha property. That's been said, your Yenaksha cost basis will be still zero over there because you already consume your cost basis in the first one. But not to be too technical, idea is that Yenaksha 1031 exchange allows you to transfer your proceed or the gain into the other property without paying taxes.
Now, can you split it? Like, say, if you make $400,000 and you spend $200,000, would you have to pay taxes on that $200,000?
Absolutely, okay. Yes, right. Yeah. You could do that one. So you don't necessarily need to invest all $400,000. You can do that one. In fact, nowadays, even the under the new tax law, Yenaksha 2017, there is the opportunity zone came in. So it works very similar to, up to some extent, 1031 exchange. That's where even you don't need to be the real estate investors. Say, for example, if you're selling your business and that you are making, say, gain, and that either you can even invest into the opportunity zone and that either you don't pay taxes. Again, that whenever you're putting the money into the opportunity zone, then you're locking that money for a certain time, and you ideally can't access that one. But if that money is not needed, then probably it's a good idea to take a look at into the opportunity zone.
Right. How is an income property a tax shelter or any real estate that you own?
I say this one, real estate and life insurance, when you combine, it is a great tax advantages. You can do that one, and that most people don't know, thanks to probably, rich dad, poor dad, I guess, that other people, knew that actually started learning about the, real estate investment, and that now, and that also, again, if you look at the real estate investment, has some sex appeal to it. It looks good. You do have the property. Mm-hmm. You can go, you can touch it, you can feel it, you can show it. But at the same time, if you look at the life insurance, has a tremendous tax advantages. That is, most people don't really understand. Most people understand probably that if something happens to you, that your family will get the money. But the real tax advantages is into the cash value policy that works very similar to that real estate, that other, you can have your money grow tax deferred and, can be taken out tax free via policy loan. There's so many other strategies you can do. So, yes, that other, similarly, the real estate is very tax advantageous, and that you can combine with the life insurance. Many a time my client, and that are some of the ultra high net worth, other guys I'm talking, and that other, they build the actually fortune in the real estate, right?
Right.
So now they say, okay, Neil, now I'm, 60, 65, 70, and I have a $40 million, $50 million, real estate portfolio. Mm-hmm. But now the other issue comes is, yes, it was very efficient in terms of the income tax purpose, but now they are subject to the state tax. Whenever they die, they have to pay that tax,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, people forget about that.
Exactly. So that the real estate is very efficient for the income tax purpose, but if you are fortunate enough and can build a larger portfolio, then you will end up paying the state tax. So now they say, oh my God, how can we
get
do something?
That.
Yeah, get around that one. Mm-hmm. And that other, I say, if there is a, that actually magic wand, and if I can turn your real estate into life insurance, then the entire portfolio will go estate tax free, but it doesn't happen. So that actually point I'm trying to make is, you need to plan properly to have both, parallelly. And that here we are talking about, say, the two asset class. One is the real estate and the, cash value life insurance. But there are other asset classes where the stocks and the bonds and the cash and the, obviously, extra commodities as well. And that you want to have the right, the asset allocation. Because if you look at that, Ivan, there are three factors affects your investment return, okay? One is the asset allocation. Number two is the actually taxation of those investment. And third one is expenses associated with the investment. So that you need to look at a little bit holistically rather than only on one side.
Well, I wanted to review the insurance part of what you were saying and how that affects real estate. Are you talking about whole life insurance, or are you talking about term life insurance? Are you talking about using whole life as a savings and then taking that money out of your whole life to invest in real estate? Just go into detail a little bit more about that.
Very good question. Yeah. So that I'm talking primarily about the cash value policies, or the industry knows them as the actual permanent policy. And the actual permanent policy includes the whole life policy and universal life policies, basically. So term, obviously, a term is like a homeowner's policy or the car insurance policy. Mm-hmm. There's no cash value. So that if that something happens to the given term, then obviously your family, your beneficiary gets the money. But most probably, according to actually Penn State University did the study, and that according to that one, your likelihood of actually getting the term insurance death claim is less than 1%. So 99%, you're not going to get the actually term insurance death benefit. That's why it's cheap. See, that the most people don't get this one, that life insurance is not some charitable organization. It's not some magical word. It is the statistical calculation. People are paying for that one, and they are paying the death claim, basically, right? Sure. So the term is cheaper. It means that they are not paying claim. As simple as that.
Sure.
So that obviously, here I'm talking about the actually permanent policy, and the actually permanent policy includes the two kind of policy: whole life, which is more like a CD kind of things, guaranteed everything that you will have a guarantee, and there's no stock market and elements. Universal, I'm talking about primarily index universal life or the actually variable universal life. That's where either it is invested in a stock market or it is linked with the stock market, so you can get potentially higher return than probably the whole life, basically. So how can you use this one with the real estate, basically? So what happens is that say you buy the real estate, okay, and as you mentioned, income property.
Right.
Once you start generate the income, you buy the permanent life policy. It can be whole life or the other one. And the income you are getting, say the $1,000, $2,000 per month, whatever you are getting net, that you start putting into your the whole life
whole
policy.
Life, yes.
Okay. So now that what happened, the actual permanent life, this kind of policies takes time to build the cash value. That first year or two, again, that you can have the, high cash value policies, and there's a different way to structure it. But so it takes a year or two or three to see the cash value. So what you do is that once you see the cash value, you can take that money and buy the other real estate property.
No.
You go through the same cycle, okay?
And you have a tax advantage.
Exactly. So here you are taking, tax-free income that you are putting into the real estate. Again, you do the second cycle now, that either you buy that one, you earn the income, you start, actually buy the other one, and then, again, it takes 2-3 years to build some cash value. You take and you do the same thing. So now, what I'm talking about over here, Ivan, so here I'm talking about very, very important money principle, Ivan, that I'm
strategic.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that other I do talk in my book as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 3-4 principle, money principle. So see that other, what happened to make better return? Ray Dalio, probably most people don't know, but he's the largest hedge fund manager and the 25th richest man in the America. Ray Dalio says that one, winning in a stock market, it is harder than competing in Olympics. So making more money, it's really, really difficult. So if by doing the day trading, if you think so you can outperform the fund manager, it's not really true, I guess, right? So how can you enhance your return? So only way you can enhance the return is when you follow some of the money principles. So what are some of the money principles? And that I will not talk all, but I'll give you two examples. One, it's called the velocity of money. Money in motion creates more money. So that what happened, the normal people use their money only once. So say, for example, you put your money into the real estate, for example, over here, or mm-hmm. that you put your money into the CD or the mutual mm-hmm. fund mm-hmm. or even the permanent life insurance, okay. right? What it does, it's just doing the one job, one purpose serves, right? So mm-hmm. it's just doing it. Obviously, mm-hmm. you might be making good return, that's fine, but it's just doing the one job or serving the one purpose. On the other hand, if you look at the bank, bank uses their money 5 to 6 times. So that right. whatever money you give in 2% in a bank, banks uses 5-6 times, and that makes almost 17-18% on that mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, can we be like bank? Probably not, but can we use our money more than once? Absolutely. And that's where the one of the example I say to
yeah.
you.
Use the principle. The, yes.
Right, you know,
yes.
So now you are actually utilizing your money more than once.
Right.
Second money principle, it's not where you invest, how you use that matters.
Right.
This is so profound, and that it's going to take some time, but instead of that other going to that one, I'm just going to give you the example so that other, you know, listener can understand easily. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, I'm not sure you, you know, play golf, but it is any sports. Mm-hmm. Say, for example, say that you want to improve your game. So what you do, you go and buy the expensive balls or the club. Now, buying the expensive golf club or the expensive golf ball, you don't become the better golfer over the period, right? It is that your swing, it is your grip, it is how to recover from bad shot with that one. If mm-hmm. you have a better, you know, the club
right,
and
right,
ball.
Right.
Yes. So it's not one thing. So that other people has to understand there is no magic bullet. It's not one investment. It is the combination of the product and strategy makes the really optimum portfolio.
Making wise decisions when you're doing your financial planning. I can listen to you all day. I just love this stuff. Well, let's talk about your book because we have ran out of time. Give me 1 minute to tell me what Win the War for Money and Success is all about.
So the reader can get 2-3 things out of that one. That is the actual condensed version. One is how can they reduce their tax burden legitimately? So that is what one I'm talking. The second one is I do believe that we have a much bigger issue that America faces, and you did mention that now we are living longer.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We are that living longer. See that earlier when the Social Security came in, at the time it was expected that most people will die within 5 years after the retirement. Now you're going to live 30 years.
Yeah.
So how are you going to make sure that your money that lasts
sure.
As long as you last, right?
Sure.
Basically. So that is what the second one, so that my book, you will learn how to literally double your retirement income. And finally, as you mentioned, how to leave some solid legacy for the generational wealth.
Fantastic. Tell everyone how they can get in contact with you.
So they can go to my website, neiljasani.com, and I guess they would be able to download the free, my actual favorite chapters, and then they can take it from there.
Thank you so much, Neil, for being on the show. I loved it.
Thank you for having me. It was absolutely, that fun being here.
Thank you. Thank you guys for joining us once again on another episode of the Yvonne Candy Show. And you know what I think. Just live the life you deserve.
Thanks for listening to the Yvonne Candy Show. Want to know more? Check out YvonneCandy.com.